Hi, this is John Trope. And with me is integrative medicine specialist Dr. Andrew Hayman from George Washington University. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, John.
Our series, this is the third of a series of discussions that we're having on integrative medicine, and in particular using integrative medicine approaches to manage underlying inflammation and very specific issues. At the end of our last discussion, we talked about this syndrome called chronic inflammatory response syndrome. This is clearly one condition that probably best defines or describes that syndrome, and I've heard you talk about it as really this issue of Lyme's and biotoxin insult that probably accentuates this problem of inflammatory syndrome, if you will. Tell us a little bit about what CIRS or CIRS is, and in particular in light of that Lyme patient who's really a chronic inflammatory sufferer.
Sure. So the chronic inflammatory response syndrome was first recognized by my friend and colleague, Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a number of years ago during a Fusarium outbreak in the Chesapeake Bay. And there was an algae bloom in the water, and people were getting very sick, and no one really knew why. And he and a few other physicians who were practicing along the shoreline in that area, because of the chronic diarrhea that was presenting in these patients, he gave them cholestyramine, which is a binder, it's a bile acid sequestrant, which as a side effect helps to stall diarrhea. Well, it turned out a lot of their other symptoms got better. Their headaches, their joint pain, their fatigue, their depression, and it got him thinking about this issue. And sort of fast forward a number of years later, as he sort of begun to build an architecture, and then I partnered with him several years ago, we began to sort of solidify the science around the phenomenon that was occurring. And it was a recognition that about 20% of the population carry gene sequences that when they were exposed to a biotoxin, in the original case of Fusarium, sure, but it turns out there are many other biotoxins that can also initiate this inflammatory response, including things like mold, which of course is very common, but also tick-borne illnesses such as Lyme, and then a variety of other factors like VOCs and MVOCs and bacterial fragments and cell wall fragments, a whole long list that could turn on the innate immune system in this population. But if they carry those gene sequences, basically these are HLAs on chromosome 6 that induce poor antigen presentation, once they initiate this inflammatory event, they can't turn it off. So they're not activating their adaptive immune system. They're stalled in that early innate immune activity. And so they're constantly producing inflammatory proteins and what we call inflammagens that are recycled through the body. And so usually they're produced at the tissue level, and ultimately they find their way down into the liver, into the biliary tree, where they're emulsified in bile, and then dumped into the digestive tract, where they sit. And if they're not disposed of through the stool, then they just get reabsorbed through enterohepatic circulation. So you get this continuous cycle of production and remixing, essentially, of these inflammatory proteins. And these patients are miserable. And what he had stumbled upon those many years ago is that when you give a binder like cholestyramine, it sits in the digestive tract and it soaks up the inflammagens and it prevents them from being reabsorbed. And these patients started feeling better. So this set us off on a journey of, well, what is so special about this 20%? Why do they remain sick for so long? The most common symptom that these people have is fatigue. So when you look at chronic fatigue as a label from a conventional perspective, most likely this is what's going on with them. They're in that 20% population. And so we've learned a lot about how to identify these people, how to evaluate them, how to intervene appropriately, identify the exposures, turn off this chronic inflammation, and deal with the consequences. This has been an enormous effort on our part, but what it's allowed us to do is end up solving maybe some of the trickiest presenting complaints in medicine, those difficult chronic fatigue patients or fibromyalgia patients or, you know, ones that have ongoing mood disorders or even just all of this leading to social dysfunction, sort of withdrawal from the community, withdrawal from their relationships because they feel so poorly. And as we sort of looked under the hood and discovered these links between the genetics, the biotoxin, the chronic inflammatory response, and all the final consequences, we've uncovered, I think, a treasure trove of sort of medical information, and we've now, I think, really begun to help solve some of the more sticky but very common issues that present in even, you know, every primary care practice around the country.
So this is really exciting new clinical insights, because what you're describing are a couple of really key and pivotal paradigm shifts in the approach, particularly of managing chronic inflammatory response syndrome, but more specifically even Lyme.
Yeah.
And so I guess let me tease it out. Is the first step, you know, typical standard approach has been to use an antibiotic. You'll kill the insulting, challenging biotoxin or microbe, and then you're done. But we know that that's clearly not the case because of what you just described in your example and the
right.
story. Is that so? That's the first, like, so what? The real wow insight here is, one is, it's not just an antibiotic.
Right.
And if it's chronic, you got a bigger problem.
Right. Well, what's interesting about the Lyme literature is that for years there has been a recognition that here we go again, that 20% number comes up, that 20% of patients who are diagnosed with Lyme will remain sick even after antibiotic therapy. Mm. And this was categorized as post-Lyme syndrome, that these people had something wrong with them. No one really knew what, but they remained sick for the rest of their lives. And sometimes they got better, and oftentimes they didn't. Well, our data helped to verify what the genetic contribution was to that, that in fact they had a biotoxic exposure. For them it was Lyme, and they were treated, but they remained chronically inflamed and were just getting sicker and sicker and sicker afterwards. Now, there are certain practitioners in the Lyme community that would look at the chronicity of those symptoms and say, well, that's evidence that they're still infected. And our conjecture is, well, not always. Sometimes they're just chronically inflamed, that they don't need ongoing antibiotics or herbal antimicrobials for months and years. That, in fact, really the underlying issue is this chronic inflammatory response that's been established, that these patients were vulnerable because of their genetics, and that that's a very different therapeutic approach than just layering in more and more antibiotics.
Okay. That's fantastic. It's very exciting. So the other two, I think, so what's, or the wow factors, or what you just described, or number one is there is some kind of a genetic or epigenetic component that makes it more difficult for patients to respond, and that's worth identifying. And coupled to that, let me then also just say that the other and the third wow factor is that this is a classic systems challenge. So you've got compromised systems that independently yet together in an integrated way need to be addressed. The digestive system and the GI tract needs to be addressed. The central nervous system and the neuroimmune connection in the system needs to be addressed. And then just CNS in its own right needs to heal and recover. So how do you address that? One is making sure on patient presentation, again, you know you got a non-responder, which would require, you know, Herculean efforts.
Yeah.
And then how do you tease out these systems and manage those?
So let me take the second part first, and then I'll finish with the genomics and transcriptomic piece, the epigenetics. So it absolutely is a multi-symptom, multi-system illness. And just about wherever we looked, we could find significant dysfunction. So this is, yes, a disorder of the immune system, but this is really ongoing inflammation that often affects the brain initially. So there's a cytokine storm in the brain that then begins to damage key centers. So leptin receptors on the posterior hypothalamus. So these patients often gain weight. It's not their fault. We also see damage on the anterior hypothalamus. So they have poor production of very specialized neuropeptides, such as melanocyte-stimulating hormone or arginine vasopressin or vasoactive intestinal peptide. So you get these secondary consequences that as the brain becomes injured, we begin to see peripheral alterations in the role that these centers in the brain play with regulating hormones, regulating digestion, regulating the cardiopulmonary circuit. And so we can see these shifts that are happening as we do our peripheral measurements. One of the biggest insights that we've had is that this inflammation causes excitation of what's called hypoxia-inducible factor, which leads to excess expression of TGF-beta-1, as well as alterations in vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF. The end consequence of that is capillary constriction. These patients are hypoxic, they have poor exercise tolerance, and one of the main consequences is their VO2 max starts to drop. So they often express dyspnea on exertion, shortness of breath, poor exercise recovery. We can even see pulmonary hypertension, interstitial lung disease. These patients are tired. They can't motivate. They have very difficult time recovering from efforts. This is all outside of the brain-related changes, the gut dysfunction, the chronic inflammation, the hormonal imbalances. To me, if you want to take this on as a practitioner, this is what I would call integrative medicine 2.0. You better be good at leaky gut, and you better be good at your hormones, and you better be good at regulating the immune response and fixing the nervous system, and that you have to pull all these pieces together. And there's an order that we do it in. Now, interestingly, even when the blood labs go back to normal, all these markers that I've mentioned return to their baseline, what we recognize is that some patients were still symptomatic, and we ask the question, why? And the only insight we thought we could get that would be meaningful is we began to measure their transcriptome, meaning their RNA expression off the DNA. We wanted to see, well, was there some residual impact on the genome that we weren't capturing in the blood labs? So we gained access to a next-generation sequencer, and we began measuring about 900 genes in the mitochondria, looking at genetic expression. And what we found was astounding. So if you backtrack just a little bit, in the last segment we talked about genetics and the presence of certain genes that might influence health, like MTHFR. If you have a genetic impairment, what's thought to happen is there's a roadblock in those metabolic processes that that gene plays a role in. So, for example, if there's an MTHFR defect, you should have poor glutathione production because that's ultimately the cell machinery where MTHFR is participating in. So there's a whole cascade of events that occurs. So with these SNPs, as we call them, heterozygosity or homozygosity, there should be some sort of inherent downregulation of gene activity. When we looked at the transcriptome of patients, meaning total gene expression in this patient population, we looked at mold and Lyme. What we found was exactly the opposite, that out of the 900 genes that we measured, around 500 excess genes were turned on. They were unregulated in our Lyme population. And 700 extra genes were inappropriately turned on in our mold population, even though, interestingly, the symptoms are identical in that patient population, the blood markers are essentially the same, but their genomic expression segmented, they were different, and that, in fact, what we were identifying was loss of regulation of gene response, that genes really should be harmonized by being downregulated, and that only when they are required, they should, you know, sort of turn on and do their job, and then they need to turn off again. What happens in mold and Lyme is that too many genes are turned on at once, that there's too much noise in genetic expression. It's sort of like a symphony where all the instruments are playing at once, and there's no melody, there's no harmony, it's just a cacophony of noise. And so there was too much RNA floating around inside the cell nucleus, and therefore the ribosomes didn't know what to make, so they had poor protein production. This is what we would consider protein wasting syndrome, and that this was really a disorder at the RNA ribosomal subunit, that this was not a problem of the genome itself, it was a problem of genetic expression, and that we also showed through targeted therapy that once the blood labs go back to normal, we can...
This is really exciting. I guess a couple of quick follow-up questions here in the time that we have left is number one is when those genes are dysregulated in both population groups, are they primarily affecting the inflammatory influencers or the metabolic influences of the inflammatory process, and that's what's gone haywire, and so you've got to stabilize that. And if that is the case, you're, you know, we're now talking about an epigenetic firestorm And if that's the case, are there natural nutritional therapies that we could use from methylation to, you know, the use of microRNAs?
Yeah, so in fact, we have a toolkit, and it includes things like resveratrol and carnitine and boswellia and, you know, natural compounds that have plenty of good microRNA and, you know, a whole variety of things that we have to do in a certain sequence to turn off the inflammation and re-regulate that gene response. That this is integrative medicine 2.0. We are down to the genetic level now, but we can show in our measurements the improved expression, that it's not just a guess in terms of, well, you're heterozygous for MTHFR, and I think that's why you have your memory loss and depression, so I'm going to give you some methylation. It's not just that. You got to do all these other pieces. We need to be more sophisticated, and we now have the tools to do it.
Well, thanks very much. It's an exciting chance to learn more and to talk about new clinical insights and new clinical paradigms. Very powerful discussion. Thanks very much. For those of our listeners who would like more information, we'd invite you to look at holisticmatters.com for more on this topic by Dr. Heyman and Dr. Shoemaker. And also, Dr. Heyman, I know that you're presenting a number of conferences and seminars in the coming 6 and 12 months that will also be available on Holistic Matters, as well as publish on our site as events that we'd encourage all of our listeners to attend. So thanks very much. This has been John Trope, having the pleasure to complete our series on inflammation and chronic inflammatory response syndromes with our integrative medicine expert, Dr. Andrew Heyman. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John.